Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who, of all the people I've ever worked with in my life, he is in the top two of people that I've just basically stood in one spot and drank coffee with for 14-hour days. It's Christopher Kelly.
To be fair, we did move in one other spot. I think one time I was in the one room, and then you were in the other room. You're like, hey, Kelly, I got a 10-1.
Yeah.
Hold my coffee.
Yeah. So the last time we worked together actually was in 2016.
Oh gosh.
Should we name drop movies? Does it matter now?
It's been a while, and I mean, you got half of them on your.
Yeah. So we worked together on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and that was a blast to work on. But it was all in a studio, and you and I kind of weren't in the inner sanctum of the people kind of prepping everything. We were just kind of around the periphery, and you and I just sat around and drank a lot of coffee and talked about movies.
There's a lot of coffee, and I remember we had to set up the bell system because it wasn't working. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it was literally all over that warehouse. It was like one guy was on the other side, and then I was like a quarter of a mile the other way. It's like, hey, Kelly.
And then in between takes, you and I would just kind of meet in the middle, sip our coffee, and just talk about
Figure out why the door couldn't open. And then the one guy comes out and puts a doorknob on it. And we're like, why didn't they think of this like four movies ago? Because they've been shooting movies here for like 5 years.
And then you and I were also on the back lot of another movie on Pinewood where we were doing like second unit stunts, dropping cars. And that's basically 8 minutes of work in a day and then 14 hours of standing around. And even though it was summer, we were still just drinking coffee.
the coffee was evaporating. We were just breathing it in.
And then it was just like, action! Then we run around like maniacs. Stuff blows up. And then we meet back in the middle. So, man, you know, what's up with this coffee? Basically, we drank coffee, and then we had to go to the bathroom a lot. That was basically it. Just coffee, bathroom.
On the back lot, you kind of sweat it all out.
Yeah, so you just pass out. Where did Kelly go? He fell. He's in a tent somewhere.
He fell in that tub of coffee.
Yeah. The vat. And so a lot of people might recognize you, Chris, from all the questions you've asked from 2015 until now. You have asked many questions.
That's correct. Long-time listener, many questions sent in, first-time podcasting.
And you and I met on Anchorman 2.
We did. I was telling the story actually earlier today whenever I drove past Lucky Street, because that's where it was. Yep. Remember the diner was over there. I shot a Russian music video actually right there at that diner. And then I was like, this place looks familiar. That's where I met Mark.
Yep.
And then we're like sitting there. I told him the story about how we had all the vehicles running. And then there was this ridiculous advertisement for, was it La Jolla?
Oscar De La Jolla.
He was a lawyer.
I'll knock your settlement out or something.
It was the guy had his name.
Oh,
and then it was like, well, if I got a similar, it wasn't even the same name. It was a similar sounding name.
Well, I thought De La Jolla. He was shellacking, like, hey, I'm De La Jolla. These people will knock out your settlement.
Yeah, it was that. Because the guy had a similar name. And it wasn't the same name, but it was a very similar sounding name. So I guess the idea was, well, people associate me with Oscar De La Jolla. And it's like, I never put boxing mixed with being a lawyer, but that's what it was. And it just a very weird advertisement because I remember it was all black. And then it was him like looking like he was going to throw a punch. And it was like,
are you going to, like, if I get into an accident, are you going to punch the person who destroyed my car? Are you going to hurt people? And then we developed an in-joke that for years was basically just an in-joke that whenever we told people, they would just shrug and hate us. But when you and I talked about it, it was just fun. Basically, so that Oscar De La Jolla is so rich, he bronzes everything. So we just basically said, hey, you know, like, hey, look up, Chris. Or no, look at your shoes, Chris. You look at your shoes. You look back. I'm like, look back down now. Like, he bronzes them that quick.
And all of his fruit contained rubies.
Yeah.
And diamonds. Like, hey, De La Jolla, I'd love to go for a nectarine right now. And he's like, throws it at you. Clunk. Oh, my God. This sandwich took a bite out of me.
I need something to spend my money on. But on that job, I lost many brain cells.
Yeah.
Because you were driving the car. And then I was stuck on a street with vehicles running all week during hot weather, eating fumes from old cars.
I think we did put a hole in the ozone layer that day.
That
was a rough week.
I went home.
It started out cold and then it ended hot. It was such a weird.
I went home every night and I didn't know where I was because all the fumes just got to me. Megan's like, hey, Mark, who are you? I'm like, who are you? Why are you in my house?
Where's your truck? I floated here, is what I had.
A truck? I ran home. And on that set, Sacha Baron Cohen told you to unionize.
Yeah, so he told me. He told
didn't
me
even, he didn't know you.
We were waiting for the bathroom, and then remember, there's only one bathroom for the entire area. It was in a one of those. It was in a head shop that was off the corner. And then the guy was. It was beside the what was the name of the Goodfellas Haircuts or something.
Yeah.
It was beside that one, and then they were. Went to the bathroom, and then Sacha Baron Cohen came down. He saw me, and I was just like, he's like, oh, are you waiting for the bathroom? I was like, yes. And he's like, you think there'd be more bathrooms here? I mean, he's like, this is a major movie. And I was like, what do you want me to do? I don't. It's like, I'm just a driver. And he's like, okay, great. So you're union. And I was like, no, sorry. I was like, I'm not. And he's like, well, you need to unionize. And then he walks right into the bathroom, and I was like, you cut right in front of me. Like, whoa, hold on there, Borat. Like, yeah. I mean...
Yeah,
like I mean, again, you're important and everything, but we all got to go, man.
Yeah, that was a cool week to be on set. And then I worked with you on Hunger Games. You were Liam Hemsworth's stand-in, and I was a PA. I worked with the background on that.
Oh, those are some massive days too.
And then inside that 17 degree warehouse, freezing.
Out in Noonan, right?
I worked my extra so hard. At the end of it, they're like, "You broke us." I like went out full teacher bouncer on them. And then I think, were you on Goosebumps?
I was briefly. I wasn't there that long.
Got it.
Because that was like the last time I was a stand-in before I started working in the crew side. And I think there was only like one scene that required me, or I think there was two scenes. I was going between Goosebumps and Finding Carter season one.
Got it.
And then that was like kind of the last time I did it. And then that's whenever I went on to Ant-Man and started working as an additional PA on that.
Cool. Well, we name dropped a lot of things. Get over yourself. But the point of this was just be like, I brought in a guy who works. He works in the industry. So
it's true.
I didn't just meet this guy on the side of the street.
Well, I mean, he kind of did, but
I met you on a street.
Yes, right. That's right. It was
Was it on the side of a street? No, I met you on the street.
I was in the ditch. And you were like, hey kid, do you know how to get to Target? I said, what? And then I said, I need to get more whiskey. Drove off, dirt in my eye.
Yeah,
I said Hoffmeyer. So yeah, I knew his name and camera panda.
That's how I meet most people is buying whiskey,
buying whiskey and throwing dirt in their eyes. I mean,
but no. So this movie, kind of when the schedule opened up, I know you don't just watch horror movies, but you do direct horror shorts. You've made some really brutal ones. Your Christmas one, I showed to my students, and they all. Felt like they got punched right in their guts.
Oh, wonderful.
I was very successful at that. But when I watched this movie, Strangers Pray at Night, and when you said you wanted to podcast, I was like, I just want to talk to you. I haven't been able to talk to many people about Strangers Pray at Night. I love this movie. I think it's – when I first watched it, I put it on the background just to kind of watch a movie because I like to catch all the horror movies for my list. But then it drew me in, and I just fell in love with it. And I kind of felt like it was underrated, but now websites like the AV Club, Collider – Bloody Disgusting, they're all writing about this movie. They're writing about the pool scene. It's actually getting a second life. So I was like, hey, Chris Kelly, come on over and talk to me about Strangers Pray at Night. And
bring the whiskey. Throw the dirt in your eyes. Come on in.
And you agreed, right? So I'm glad to have you, man.
Thank you very much. Yeah, whenever you told me about this, I was first against watching the movie because I really wasn't a big fan of the first Strangers movie.
Oh, I don't like it at all.
Well, my main issue with it was not so much what everybody else had an issue with. My issue was with Brian Bertino, which was in 2008, which if we can all remember a decade ago, horror films were kind of more about home invasions and we were doing heavy remakes of foreign films and also 70s and 80s classics.
In 2005, there were 18 remakes.
Jeez.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off there. You're on a good tangent. So you're annoyed at
No, I was because this was in the early days when I first started really looking into the internet. I didn't really use the internet that much because it wasn't really required whenever I was in college. My professor actually told us that he would fail us if we used any online sources. So we didn't. True story. So I never really used it. And then when I started using it, that's when I started watching I don't know the name of it. It's a French film, but it's ILS. I guess that would be Ile?
I don't know.
But that movie is basically what The Strangers was. And it came out, I think it was a year or two prior to that. And I saw that movie because I was on a big kick right after I had graduated from college. I wanted to watch just about anything that I could. So, of course, you know, we know Blockbuster, they used to have different sections. So then you could just walk into a section and just go, oh, well, this movie looks great. What, Blue Velvet? And you just pick it up, you know. I'll show this to my mom.
Hey, Mom!
And then I was banned from ever picking up
a film. I hope you weren't drinking Heineken when you were watching it.
The ripe old age of, what, 20?
Now, are you saying Them? You know that movie, yes. Them, about the home invasion?
Yes, that is that one, but there was also a movie called...
Funny Games?
Yes, but that's totally different movies.
Oh, wow.
Funny Games was...
Reindeer Games?
I love that
Truman
movie.
Show.
Phantoms. What about Phantoms? That's what I'm saying.
You know, Affleck was a bot. So I actually have Phantoms DVR downstairs because I want to watch it to see if he is the bomb in Phantoms.
It's been so many years.
I want to quantify whether he is the bomb or not in Phantoms.
I just remember it was like because it was like right after he had done Good Will Hunting. So everyone pictured him as being this picturesque, very like kind of... Like, he had that suave look to himself, mm-hmm. but he was gangsta, regardless. I mean, in Good Will Hunting, he may have looked like, you know, pretty boy Ricky, but he was...
He just stomped you.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed a lot of actors, after they win Oscars, they have bad horror movies. So, Jennifer Lawrence had House at the End of the Street when she first hit big. Then you had Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey hit big, and they had Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation.
Did they do that before they got the Oscars?
Yeah, and then they were like, "Don't release this movie."
So that
really happens where a bad horror movie comes out after people hit big.
What about Matthew McConaughey's greatest line? Whenever he's beating up the was it the sheriff or something? He's like, "I'm not a cannibal. I like liver." Punches the guy and onions. Punch.
Wait. Does that happen?
Yeah, that's a real line.
Wow.
I believe it was delivered by him. It may not, but that is in that movie. And a true story. A friend of mine that I had met on a movie called, at the time it was called Michelle Darnell. Now it's called The Boss. You can watch it. I think it's on demand now. I worked on that. I did a lot of the assisting with the background.
Okay, get over
yourself.
That was
like my first. That was my first big. My first full time gig.
Oh, I heard a lot of stories about that. Yeah, you.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark. Guess where I'm at today? Same place you were at yesterday.
I'm still in the ditch.
Oh, cool. You're awesome, man. I gotta go. I'm working on Michelle Darnell. Well, you just told me that 30 seconds ago.
Like, I call you. Hey, I can't talk. I gotta hang up. Like, wait a minute.
Wait, you just called me. I'm working on Michelle Darnell. And your Facebook posts. Hey, guys, eating a sandwich on Michelle Darnell. Funny.
Hashtag film life.
Funny.
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah.
So, when I was on that movie, I came...
Who's there?
Who's there?
Me on Michelle Darnell. Can you believe it? Yeah, man, you just texted me. And then he called me.
You FaceTimed me.
You kept me on FaceTime all day today. My battery's dying.
What's with this carrier pigeon?
Michelle Darnell! I saw banners in the sky. Hey, Mark, I'm on Michelle Darnell. Can you believe it? Weird. Set life.
Comma from Chris.
In case I didn't even... You paid the extra $500 for that, too.
I didn't even know you made that much.
Set life.
So, I was on that movie. I became friends with the prop guy. His name was Jim. He actually was the one who designed the chainsaw from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. And he actually worked on one of my personal favorite films as a child, 976 Evil, which was directed by Robert Englund.
Really?
And he got his, my friend Jim got his SAG card on that movie. He plays the kid in the cafeteria that walks up and he's like, he bumps into the other kid played by...
Stevie Ray Vaughan. Michelle Darnell.
By Michelle Darnell. That kid who was had that weird lifestyle and then he eventually wound up...
Corey Feldman?
Yeah.
Right. Corey Haim. Corey Haim.
No. Well, he was in...
Lost Boys.
He was in...
Summer Drive. Me Crazy.
Fright Night.
The original? No, yeah. He was in Lost Boys.
No, the kid... No, not, it wasn't Corey Feldman, Corey Haim. It was the guy who was in Fright Night. He's the one who got the X burn in his head. I can't remember his name right now, but...
He's still alive.
I thought he died.
No, the crazy Ed?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just did a documentary about Fright Night, and he was all over it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, anyways.
So cool, Brewster. That's the name of it. It's on Shudder. Good documentary about Fright Night. Very good.
Oh, wow. I got to go back on Shudder. I've been watching a lot of their horror films on there. They had a great one, Christmas Evil, which I hadn't seen, so I was really happy about that.
So you're telling me, Chris, that you haven't listened to our Fright Night podcast where we discussed this
I did.
Were probably watching Michelle Darnell, the boss.
I was getting the tattoo.
A.K.A. the turtleneck. You've been wearing nothing but turtleneck since that movie. In the words of Mitejarek, it's been like a tiny weak man has been choking you every day. And all you do is turtleneck it.
I also started cutting my hair really short and dyeing it red.
I'm destroying this story.
Well, my husband now has a giant mustache. That's how dedicated to that movie I am.
Yep.
So
they work together a lot.
Yeah, they do.
Melissa McCarthy and her husband.
Ben Falcone.
Yeah, Ben Falcone, yeah.
They're really sweet people.
He did Happy Time Murders.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I didn't see that movie.
Yeah, you didn't work on it?
No. The one movie I had.
Great people, though.
I watched a movie that I did work on the other day, actually. I showed it to my girlfriend. It was Office Christmas Party.
Oh, yeah. You worked on that?
Jimmy, I did.
Oh, yeah. You told me stories about it, but I wasn't sure. You did tell me stories. I won't say nothing.
But
confident. You signed an NDA.
Of course, yes.
I could burn you right now from the stories you told me.
This story is 3 years old. I'm telling you. I will get... I forgot he had a small role in that movie. He plays the doctor at the end. It's not really funny, but I think he was just in town shooting a movie.
Ben Falcone?
Yeah.
He's also in Bridesmaids with her at the end, too. In that giant... he's the cop on the plane. All right, so why do you hate strangers?
Because of Eel. So basically, back in the days of the early... after I graduated from college, I started going on the internet more and reading.
I picture you typing with two fingers. Your left
typing one hand.
Your left and right pointer finger. Just boop, boop.
It was hell being a journalist. So I tell you. So I watched the movie Ill. I think that's what it's called, ILS. And the basic premise of the movie is the same thing as The Strangers. It was made a year or two prior to The Strangers. It's a French movie. I believe it's the woman that's in it is an American, but you know, she teaches French in the movie, and her husband is a Frenchman, and he's a writer. And then in the middle of the night, they get attacked by masked figures. It's the exact same movie, exact same setup, exact same everything. But whenever The Strangers came out, somebody had talked about that, saying like, oh, well, this movie came out prior to that. And I was like, well, yeah, it did, but I didn't think any of a connection or anything. I didn't think anything of it because people remake movies all the time. But Brian Bertino claimed that he never saw that movie. And he claimed that it was all an original movie, that it was all him. And then he released the original script. And I remember seeing it, that it actually was dated the year prior to ILS. And I was like, this is a little bit too weird.
Scripts do sit around for a long time. I've had a monster movie on my brain for 10 years, and now they just announced two monster movies. Just as I start writing it. And I was like, son of a... So maybe, you know, maybe that is the case, right?
It could be, but it was a little bit too specific. I mean, it's one thing to do a home invasion movie. It's like, it's one thing to say like Panic Room versus Strangers. Both home invasion films, both totally entirely different films. I'm just going to say Ill. Ill is so identical to The Strangers. I thought it was just a little bit too much.
Are you telling them?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes, them. The French version of them. But they're so identical. It's just like there's
because you
no
are home.
Way.
Like at the end of them because
no,
you are home.
There's
right?
a different. Yeah, in the Strangers they do say that, but in the ending of them, they just spoiler alert. They murder the two people, and then they just walk away, and then you find out that the kids that they're actually kids.
Yeah.
And that they were the students of the teacher.
Yeah, that's
so they're
cool.
Basically, I mean, yeah, it was kind of like, because I mean, I think it ends with he brings out a noisemaker, you know, like kick things. He brought out one of those, and then that's how he and that's how you find out. You're like, oh my gosh, they're actually been kids. These are the kids all along. But they were so identical. I just thought it was so like if he would have said, oh well, yeah, I relied on this movie. But to say it was all. You know, it's kind of like when Neil Young said that he never listened to anyone else's music other than his own. I was like, come on, bro. Well, bro.
All right. You know why I didn't like Strangers is I really didn't like the villains, man. I know that they were supposed to be nihilistic, but I felt like they were super pretentious. And I thought that after the kills, they were just going to go to a coffee shop and drink very large. I've said this before. Drink very large cappuccinos and just be like, That was great. Yeah, I mean, I could have done better. But, you know, let's go listen to some Pearl Jam. Like
Dollface, I mean, you know, maybe next week you could try something else.
I just felt like it was hyper-stylized, and I didn't like them. I know there's supposed to be no motive, right? And I have no problem with killers not needing motive.
But absolutely.
These ones were just hyper stylized, and I didn't like their pacing. I didn't like the way they moved. It felt like they were just pretentious killers who I didn't buy them. That's why the Strangers Pray at Night. The three of these killers, they're definitely omnipresent. And they're kind of spectral in a way, but I like that they make mistakes sometimes. I like that their kills are goofy. I like that. I feel like the three of these killers in Strangers Pray at Night are actually crazy.
Do you think they're the same ones as the Strangers?
I don't think so.
Do you think that? I mean, they're wearing the same clothes.
I think they're implying that they are, but I hate the first killer, so I don't want to do it.
Of course.
It's denial. I like that they make some mistakes. I like that.
What do you mean?
Well, she runs at him and gets hit in the head with a golf club.
Well, she's sneaking up on him, but like, it's almost like she wouldn't have done that if she was in the first one. But then again, there's so much they're at the poolside scene, which we'll talk about later. Which
classic.
Great scene. But there's so much space between them. It's almost like a smarter move for her would have been to take off her shoes.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, of course she's going to get hit with a club, but maybe she was so arrogant about it that she's like, he's not going to turn around in time. But she had, does she have a knife or what is it that she has?
She had a knife. And there was a knife, but there is arrogance with them for sure. I could see they maybe played these games and they rely on fear to do that.
This is the one where they, spoiler alert, they finally mess it all up because they get smoked.
And, I was talking to my good buddy Zach, who directed Interior. Zach Beckler directed the movie Interior.
Good
movie. He and I just did a best horror of 2018 list. And he made a very good point about how the first film, you have Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman. He proposes to her. She says no. So there's this weird thing in the air and they attack. A family unit almost attacks two people who aren't. So this one, you have the three killers, Dollface, Man in the Mask, and what's the other
Pin-up.
One? And which one?
Pin-up.
So they're like a family unit almost.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
so they're you have this weird family attacking a nuclear family, like a husband, wife, two kids. It's a weird dynamic of families fighting. And I thought that was a pretty interesting dynamic between the two families. You know what I mean?
No, I get it. Because then it's almost like you almost have like two separate people being attacked. And then the next one's a family unit. But then they just smoke everyone right in the beginning. I mean, this is a great slasher because it's like anyone can die at any given point in time. And I mean, Christina Hendricks, assumed that she was going to like at least make halfway through the movie. And no. She is brutally murdered.
She adds a lot to this movie.
She's very good. I liked her a lot. Also, Bailey Madison.
She's good.
We all remember from Just Go With It.
And she's in The Good Witch, too. That's on like some show. But she knocks out a lot of dialogue. And she can pull off the kind of hokey dialogue of The Good Witch really well, which I think makes her a really good actress. And watching her in this, I really bought her.
She's great. Really, I didn't have much hope for her after I saw Just Go With It. But then again, she was a child, so it was kind of hard to judge her on that.
She'll never make it. You're smoking a cigar in a dark room with a poker chip poker dealer with a green visor.
Not in this town. I put my Marlboro out in her forehead. Get out of here.
You know, while you're watching the screen, it's all smoke. Like you have on a tiny TV, just nothing but smoke and fire.
I got to open a window. I open up an even tinier window just to
I don't even remember the movie. It's all smoke.
I thought at first I was like, well, she's gonna be like a typical child actor because the way she was behaving in her first roles was she was very like arms moving, eyes are huge, and she had a very like her attitude about everything was very like big, and it was like, well, she's gonna just get swallowed up with everything else. But then she came back with this. And I didn't even know that was her. It took me about like halfway through. And I was like, why do I recognize this person? And I had to look it up. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, her. She did a great job. Yeah,
she's really good in Good Witch. And also her brother's Lewis Pullman, who's Bill Pullman's son.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's one of my favorite movies of this year, top five, is Bad Times at El Royale.
I have yet to see
it. He's in it. And I'm going to give us our PG-13. He's fucking awesome in it. Like, he's really good, dude. So just between him... then you have Martin Henderson, who really added a lot of, like, I thought he did a really good job as the dad, a lot of warmth. You have this very good acting family. Also, so Johannes Roberts directed this. He did 47 Meters Down.
I wanted to talk about that. That was like...
Which, have you seen it?
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's a mean movie.
I saw it at the Dollar Theater in Marietta. Not sure if you can go out there much, but they play a lot of movies that are about to go on DVD.
Yeah.
So I'll go there and I'll watch literally anything. And that was one of the movies that I watched. And I was really impressed with it. Especially that scene like that really got me was whenever the cage is in the water and it's hooked onto the boat. And then it just, you know, there's too much pressure on it. It just comes right off. It goes right into the water. It's that one long shot of you just watching this cage going all the way down and hitting the ground. If you didn't see that in the theaters, I mean, everybody was like clutching their pearls, being like, oh my goodness. It was just because it really is. It was suffocating to watch. I did a little research on that movie, and apparently they would have been killed in about like 10 minutes because of all the pressure.
And then
it would have been done.
You know, this is crazy, Chris. It's taken me 36 years to realize this, but I've just sort of realized that these movies don't take place in our world. They take place in their world. No, I'm not being sarcastic. Like, you know how many people are like, they couldn't have survived that fall. Wait, no, who's not? I don't like that voice.
They couldn't have survived that fall.
Well, yeah, they could have because it's not our world.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's talk realism with, Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah, Fast Five.
Yeah, no, Fast Five.
It's in the Fast Five world. So you can get shot and heal in a minute in that world.
Halloween, he gets shot in the head, falls off the banister, and then, well, he also
I'm good.
Gets, yeah, he just gets up. He's like, I've been trick-or-treated to death. Yeah. You don't know what death is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on.
It's just that world. But that movie, especially the ending, what I loved about the ending was it was mean.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It was mean.
No, I love that because the shark comes out, bites the leg, and you're like, what?
Yeah. And then when she lights the flare underwater and the sharks are like, that's a good movie,
dude. Oh, I love
that.
Yeah, she hits it, and then it's like they're everywhere because you needed to have that one big jump scare because the movie was – it wasn't really filled with jump scares. It was very like slow burning.
Twilight Zone-y.
I loved it. That's one of the reasons why I loved it because of that. And it was very like slow burn. There was a big buildup. Then a quick release, and then there was like I love that about it, especially like you said with the because they like you have to stop, you have to wait, and she hits the spark, and then they're surrounded. Cool. So you had to have that one moment, and he knew that. Johannes Roberts said it was like I got to have this one moment, and then everything else can be like, are they going to live? Are they going to die? Will Mandy Moore sing another song?
A good actress.
I know. I love that.
My brother had her second CD. It was good.
I bought her first one when I was in high school.
She has a song called "I Want to Be with You" that I like.
Nice.
I'm not afraid to admit it.
All right. Well, what was it? She did Candy, wasn't it?
Yeah, Candy.
That was the one I liked. I mean, I'm a little ashamed.
Well, you were like 14 then.
I was more
15.
Like, I was like 17. I mean, it was on a mixtape CD.
How old are you?
33.
33? All right. So
sorry, 34.
Let's see. I was 18. You were 15.
Well, I had a car. I remember I had a car because I had it on a mixtape. It had Andrew W.
Wait, are we arguing about your age? I'm sorry, guys.
I love
so you had Party Hard.
I had Party Hard. I remember
and then you had
She
Candy.
Is Beautiful. She Is Beautiful, which is still one of my favorite songs. Candy. And then there was some Black Flag on there. And
that's an eclectic mixtape.
I was definitely a strange child. And then I had Fabulous. Was awesome.
Not
remember Fabulous?
Fabulous.
That's right.
I know how to spell it. I still know how to spell his name.
Because he was the only guy, like, when you receive, he's like, Fabulous. And you're like, Fabulous? No, Fabulous.
Yeah, he spelt it every song, too.
And Busta Rhymes was also one.
Yeah, so she was great, man. Like, sorry about calling you out for your age, jerk. All right, so I thought, but what I like about him, he's also redoing Resident Evil.
Oh.
Which we can continue our Resident Evil franchise pod, which is nice.
That was a great, yeah. I am not a big fan of those movies, but I love the podcast, and it actually made me want to watch them.
Because I did so much, I listened to every commentary on those movies.
Oh, yeah.
That was insane. But the director I really respect, because he does commentary, two commentaries a movie. That's awesome. But I think this guy, this Roberts, with 47 Meters Down, mean movie, Twilight Zone-y, this movie, beautiful. I think, all right, top three set pieces of the year, any movies, belongs in this film. And we can get to that a little later. I have a lot of hope for Resident Evil. The cinematographer, Ryan Samuel, I don't know how much you know about him.
I actually was going to, that was on my list of things to talk about.
He did Cold in July.
He did Dark Was the Night, which was one of my personal favorites from 4 years ago, I believe, starring Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Who mainly does
his main role. That was his main starring
role.
And
he was fantastic in that because you didn't know what was really going on. And it was shot very much like and remember how everything just looked cold.
Yeah.
And it was, even though it was supposed to be winter, like and there's always like going to be some sunshine, but everything permanently looked cold. And that's what I loved about it. And he really knew how to play with the light. where it's like even the snow, even though snow is naturally cold, it looks like very warm and welcoming. But in this movie, it looked like you don't want to go near this.
It was miserable out there.
And it was an amazing movie. The ending I could go without. But I mean, it was other than that, because I mean, you knew what was going to happen. But it was so good. It was just like, and it was shot very beautiful. So I looked him up and I was like, and he also did one of the few After Dark films that was tolerable. Remember like a decade ago, maybe more, that it was After Dark Films Presents 8 Films to Die For. They were the films that were so scary they couldn't be released in theaters.
I don't remember that.
You probably forgot about it because everybody forgot about
it. Oh, that was Masters of Horror, I'm thinking.
Masters of Horror was great too. Yeah. Followed up by Fear Itself, which was not really that great. But After Dark Films, the 8 Films
followed to up Die by For. Michelle Darnell.
I worked on all of them. At the ripe old age of, like, barely 20.
Hey, Mark!
Hey, Mark. I'm at After Dark Films.
Wait, what?
Who is this? How do you have my number?
I don't even have a cell phone yet.
Prank phone. So, After Dark Films, the 8 films. Mulberry Street. There is Wicked Little Things, Mulberry Street, and The Grave Dancers, which were the ones that were tolerable. The other ones, not really that great. But they were basically movies that were not so good. They're slightly above Sci-Fi Channel original movies. Not like new Sci-Fi Channel original movies, which is You Might Be the Killer, which I loved. Or Killer High, which was phenomenal. That should be an entire podcast in itself. They were like slightly better Sci-Fi Channel original films. And they weren't that great, but someone bought them all for like nothing. So he decided to market them in a way that would actually sell them. So he said, they're so scary, they won't play them in theaters. So people were instantly buying them flying off the shelf because this was before streaming and this was before anything else. So everybody was just running on by these like $5 to $10 movies because you're like, oh, it's a $5 movie. It's a $10 movie.
It's too scary for theaters.
Yeah, exactly. I bought them. Yeah. So what does that say about me? But Mulberry Street was the other one that Ryan Samel did. That was one of the like three that were actually tolerable to watch.
Have you watched Cold in July?
I have not.
It's on Netflix, and it's one of my favorite movies of the last like 5 years, just because of its personality. It's a squirrely little thing, but when you see his cinematography, you'll know exactly who he is. And he also did We Are What We Are, the remake.
I was going to watch that. I never got around to it.
Very good remake. Very well shot. This guy works wonders on a budget, and I think this movie was on a budget. And
I believe it wasn't that much, but it was actually less than the original Strangers. This one was a $5 million budget.
This didn't look like a $5 million movie.
It was shot in Kentucky. Their tax incentives in the middle of nowhere. And obviously that trailer park was going to be destroyed anyways because they ripped hell through that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they went full Christine, you know, John Carpenter and that thing.
The director said he wanted to make his John Carpenter movie with this, and he name-checked Christine, and the opening shot of this movie when they pull up and park, there's a shot of the grill of the truck, and it looks
like Christine.
Yeah,
that's a great book, by the way.
He that's funny. I just love that you mentioned that. Sorry to interrupt, but I want to make my John Carpenter Christine type movie, and that's what he did.
What I feel like he did with the truck was that he took Jaws, because if you watch it, I mean, you just watched it not that long ago. Well, Jaws, I'm sure you've seen it, like what you're watching.
My favorite movie.
It's like, why is it streaming right now?
Move out of the way, Chris. You're in the way of my TV.
Put out the cigar. Open up that tiny window. Yeah.
Smoke box.
So like the way the truck moves in the movie in Strangers Prey at Night is just like how the shark moves in Jaws. I mean, if you watch it, it's like you can, you know, with the heavy smoke and it's going through the field and everything, you can see the top of the cap. And it's just like the fin of the shark. Yep. And that's immediately what I thought of when I saw it. And I was just, you could almost hear it. And the music, the score that's playing, it's obviously not quite like Jaws, but it's very much like, you know.
Yeah.
And I loved that. And I thought that was great. And it obviously very heavily with Christine, especially whenever the truck bursts into flames. And then you're like, it's all over. Yay. And then, oh, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. And then it just like, I loved that because I was like, that was one of my favorite moments in Christine. Was that whenever you think that after they blow it up, set it on fire, I forget what song, I think there's a Buddy Holly song playing, but you assume that it's all over, the evil is done, we're good, oh no, it's not. And it keeps coming. You're like, oh my gosh, it's literally hell on wheels coming right at us.
And it, it was in this.
Oh yeah, and I, that's what I loved about
it. Another very practical aspect of it is you watch, you know, a lot of it was a night shoot. And they really did their best to Roger Deakins' practical light everything. So they don't just have a light behind a tree. They did their best to have lamps, trailer lights on to light everything. There were a couple false lighting scenes, but for the most part, it seemed all practical. And the good part about that truck is those headlights of that truck provided some of the best scares of the movie. So when she's in that irrigation tunnel and it turns around, and then the doll face is behind her.
Yeah, we've just begun.
Yeah, we've just begun.
And it's like, whoa!
And they, the uses of light of a shark-like truck based like Christine to turn around and get doll face and then just say, you know, we've just begun. That truck not only added like its own personality, but also added practical lighting to a cheap $5 million movie.
Of course, yes. And they obviously relied heavily.
So Chris right now, he's just smoking too much in the house here. He's just, I mean, I don't know what you're doing in here, man. He has four lit, it's like we're in Infinite Jest right now, and he has three lit cigars, two in his ears. He has two cigarettes in each ear right now, Chris does. Three in each finger. Like, he takes three, and then he takes three, and then he exhales. Why don't you just exhale? Why don't you just do one?
Smoking more than Bradley Cooper in The Star Is Born.
The cigarettes in your ears are lit. Like, it seems like a waste. There's ash. You're basically covered. You've covered my floor in 3 inches of ash since you got here. I'm going to need a shop vac. There's a tarp under you right now because all the cigarette smoke. All right, so.
So I was going to say about the lighting. The lighting is heavily influenced by Japanese horror films where they had very strange and unusual lighting.
Oh, for sure.
Another American film that did that that you might, your listeners may recall would be The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Where it was very bizarre lighting. If you watch that movie, and there's a reason
Scott Derrickson did that.
I loved him, and he was so good. And then he kind of went all bonkers.
That
with,
stupid movie. Doctor Strange is awesome.
I like Doctor Strange, but I liked it for different reasons.
What's Eric Bana in a leather coat knife fighting Joel McHale? What's the name of that movie? I'm from Boston Yonkers. Oh, I'm battling a demon. Where are we at?
Oh, what's gosh. The name of that one? What was that movie?
I got a backwoods hat. And I got a leather jacket.
And you're like, who are you? Like,
let's knife
weren't
fight.
Weren't you just the Hulk?
Joel McHale's knife fighting. What's the name of that movie?
What was it?
It's one word. It's not sinister.
It's like deliver us from evil.
Yeah, or... deliver us. No, wait. Is that
no? That was a different movie.
Yeah.
Well, they were equally. They were all equally as.
I'm terrible. From Yonkers.
Yeah. What are you doing over there with your knife, huh? What, you got your backwards hat and everything?
Knife fight.
Yeah, I'm the only one who said...
Sweet leather jacket.
Right. Yeah. It's made out of lunch meat.
No, yeah, that... So. I do like the oddity of the lighting in this. Very scarce. And also one thing that I want to see what you think about. I know I interrupted you, but they really made the trailers in this movie look expansive. Did you notice that take? Like, so...
The last time I saw...
No, I'm sorry. Strangers Pray at Night.
The last time I saw a trailer for that was actually a year ago.
Oh, no, inside the mobile homes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh,
like
they really did. They made them a lot. They made them seem a lot bigger than what they actually.
Like a lot of the zoom in, and they used some very 80s zoom in, zooms out inside the trailer. I don't know how many dolly shots they had, but in the opening, when the strangers first kill the couple. Mm-hmm. They made that trailer seem very expansive.
Oh,
very long.
I thought we were in someone's like almost like we were like in a hallway. And
yeah,
like, and it seemed a lot bigger than what it really was.
They used the length of the trailer
very well,
beautifully.
I like that idea that they used they kind of like smoked the old couple right off the bat to let everyone know what was going.
They lit them up,
but they did not have a bad time with that. I mean, I felt it was also unnecessary because it's like, we know this is a horror film. We know what's going to happen. We didn't need to kill the people right in the beginning of the movie. But it also added to it, which was kind of like, for the audience who clearly probably had no idea what The Strangers was, because you got to imagine there's probably a ton of 17 and 18 year olds that went to go see this movie. And probably, you know, a decade ago, they were like, you know, 7, 8 years old. They probably had never seen the Strangers.
And that first Strangers, they didn't have a kill until Liv Tyler killed somebody.
That's right, yeah.
So I mean,
it took a very long time for that one. It was a very slow burn of a film,
too. And also, I like just, they like I said, the spectral being, like they set them up differently in this movie. So she goes to the door, locks it, turns around, pinups behind her.
Yeah. And she's, and then it's like, oh my gosh. And yeah. She gets done. And
why
then,
are you here?
No, wait, sorry. It's Dollface.
Dollface.
And then Pinup. Oh, yeah, Pinup's lies, the other one. Lies next
Pinup's
to
a little
man.
One. Yeah, Pinup's a little bugger that gets knifed.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's the one that gets the golf club to the face.
I love that scene.
That is a great scene. It's been a long time since I've seen a golf club hitting someone in a movie. I think the last time was in Child's Play. That was probably the last time. Child's Play 2 was the last time I remember
what
seeing
it. What a
great
shot, man. That kid was exact with that.
That was a great shot that they grabbed everything in. But the use of light, which was great, because they really needed to tell a story, but they wanted to tell a basic story, but wanted to make it look different, such as I was going to reference this movie later, but I'll do it now. The Guest, Adam Wingard.
Oh yeah, love The Guest.
Personal favorite horror films. If it's not, I don't know if you could call it a horror film, but it's more of like a thriller action.
I guess it would get put in the horror section at a Blockbuster.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely wouldn't make the comedy.
Yeah,
children's section, not so much. But I really enjoyed that movie, The Guest, because it was just so weird. And it was such a weird telling of a kind of a basic story. The use of lighting, it was very much like that pool scene. The pool scene in The Strangers Pray at Night.
We should do The Guest next.
Was, oh, I would love that.
All right.
Oh, gosh.
We're done.
Yeah. Right, I've seen that movie. Oh, my God. I have that soundtrack on my Spotify.
So do I.
But they... remember the scene at the end of it, whenever they're going through the fun house.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, he's basically like toying with them because he knows where they are. He knows what they're doing. And the use of the lighting in that, and then the use of the lighting in the pool scene, they're almost identical. And it's just so bizarre lighting. The music is the same. And it's just, it made it so much more like he really was trying to like use that kind of feeling. He probably assumed that not too many people would make that connection, I'm assuming.
Well, here's an interesting thing. So Roberts was talking to Bloody Disgusting. He's like, it was a funny sequence. We were talking about how the pool should look. We wanted it to be much smaller. Then the location we ended up, there was some kind of tax incentive, Kentucky. It was not necessarily our first choice. We got there and that pool was enormous. It's bigger than an Olympic pool. It was just like, wow, how on earth are we going to make this work? It kind of fell into place. The beautiful production design by Freddie Wolf with the palm trees that just landed. Then he was talking about the underwater bits of it were not particularly tough because he shot 47 meters down.
Yeah.
Having done 47, the water didn't really faze me. I filmed the whole thing on an iPhone beforehand, and we just shot it. It was the best shot in the movie with the zoom lens where the stranger runs out. It was a good, fun day, actually. We were right by the river, and I'd never seen anything like it. When we turned the lights on, the entire of Kentucky's insect life descended on us. It was quite terrifying. We literally had people. I just had to have teams of people taking these insects out of the pool. Because it looked like the water was alive when we were filming.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that awesome?
Lord.
I know that doesn't go with what you're the lighting, but it's kind of funny that they didn't want that. And then they found it, and they're like, how are we going to light this? And it becomes one of the best beautifully lit shots of the year.
And a really great, great death, too, with the masked guy just going ham on the boy.
And the boy lives.
Of all things, right? Yeah. It's like, that was the thing when I saw the ending, and I was like, come on.
That made me so happy, really? Though. I you know what's crazy? I like these characters so much, I didn't want the nihilistic ending.
I wanted it.
Oh, really?
I wanted everyone to die, and I wanted them to come back. I almost wanted one of the strangers to come back, but we don't know if they did or not at the end because of the knock at the door. And then, but
I didn't want the nihilism.
I liked it because it made so much more sense because it's like, well, these people are almost like an unstoppable force. I understand that they're probably not going to make a third one, despite the fact that domestically they did make over $25 million
on a tiny budget.
On a $5 million, they made like, what, six times their money back.
Blumhouse would remake it, yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They didn't put much money into marketing either.
That's true. I didn't see much at all. I remember seeing the one commercial and I was just what?
They didn't they didn't have much marketing behind it. So, I mean, they made a profit on it for sure.
Oh, definitely.
And I guess I just love, you know, so when, let's see, Dollface runs out and he hits her with the golf club and then he goes to check on her and lift up the mask and she tries to stab him and then he just knifes her.
No, that's Pinup.
Pinup. Oh, yeah, Pinup. When Pinup just gets lit up and the blood flies in his face, I'm like, I've never seen this in a movie. Because earlier in the film, you're like, shoot her. He has a gun and he doesn't shoot her. But I just love that he just lit her. Because I didn't see that coming. I was like, what just happened? And then the man in the mask comes out with the axe. And what I liked most about that scene is he wasn't very good with that axe.
He wasn't. For a guy who's been killing people with an axe, we did a knife in the first
one. It just felt
one.
Real, though.
It just, yeah. I mean, he seemed like he picked up the axe out of desperation, was just like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And maybe Dollface or Pinup was his girlfriend. We don't yeah. know. And he's like, oh my gosh. So he starts swinging this thing almost like out of passion.
In a long shot. And he oh, did, yes. He did two axe swings in one take. Like, that was a well-rehearsed, choreographed. You know, when you watch horror movies.
At, then he swings at him, and then it's like he hit. It almost looked like it was a goof. That he was supposed to almost hit the boy.
Yeah.
And he swings it at him, and he actually falls into the chair.
They choreographed.
And it looks, I mean, it looked quite frightening. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if that was like a visual effects axe or not, because I don't know. But
they probably foleyed the sound in.
Well, I mean, I don't know what it would have been, but it, I mean, obviously it was a fake axe. But it was very well, like, it looked like
the
it
weight
was real.
Looked real.
I felt like he was actually swinging a real axe. Yeah. And that's what made it even a little, that made it more scary. And then it's like he falls into the water. Jumps into the water, knife comes out. He does the Wolf Creek when he's like yeah. We called him a head on a stick. He takes the knife, sticks it in his spine, breaks the spine, and that way he can still talk to him because it's literally like a head on a stick. But yeah, I mean he does that to the boy in the pool, and then it's like, oh my gosh, he's done for, and then he comes at the end. But it was
I just you know what I was expecting nihilism, and then it didn't deliver that. So then I liked it. Does that make sense? Like, I was expecting...
You got exactly opposite of what you were
expecting. Yeah, I was like, all these people are going to die, whatever. And then they lived, and I went, this is refreshing. This is not... And I'll tell you what.
They're still kind of messed up for the rest of their
lives. Oh, yeah, they're done. They're PTSD and all that. And knife wounds. But their parents are dead. But, I mean, I do like... I also like... One of my favorite shots is when the man with the mask is coming up behind Lewis Pullman in the pool with the wide shot, gaining on him like a shark. Like, it was...
Back to my Jaws. Yeah,
very good shot. So, hey, how about this? We've been talking about Jaws. Let's stop. I want to watch Jaws, and we'll come back from the break, and we'll talk about more Strangers. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I love Jaws. I also like Jaws 2. I love Jaws 3 because it's so bad, and I adore Jaws Revenge because it makes me sad to watch. Chris Kelly, thoughts?
I'm more of a Jaws 3 kind of guy. Any movie that involves Dennis Quaid smoking a cigarette while feeding a dolphin, I'm all for.
Awesome. And you know, Dennis Quaid was in, let's see, Dennis Quaid was in Playing for Keeps with Jerry Butler. Jerry Butler was in Reign of Fire with Matthew McConaughey. Matthew McConaughey was in A Time to Kill with Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock was in The Heat with Melissa McCarthy, and Melissa McCarthy was Michelle Darnell, which you worked on.
She actually brought that to my attention while I was working on that. And she said, you know, in about 4 years, Mark Hoffmeyer, don't ask me how I know him, is going to bring this up.
We went to college together.
He threw dirt in my eye. And then drove off in his truck asking about whiskey.
Yeah. She was mad, Melissa McCarthy.
I said, you too?
Yeah. I said, hey, Michelle Darnell. Boom. Whiskey.
Whiskey in the air, dirt in the eye.
I know exactly what dirt to hit to fling it on people.
It can't be the Georgia clay because it doesn't go anywhere.
It sticks to my tires and I got to clean it.
You can't get it out. I've ruined plenty of pants.
Yep. So what I do is I fling mud on people and I drive through lakes and my car turns into submersible.
Yeah.
I drive out on the other side.
You were a pretty big hit at Woodstock.
I knew mud. I was just doing wheelies. I took my truck to the original Woodstock and just did wheelies and blasted people in mud.
Bought a $17 hamburger and got out.
Yeah. $40 water that I waited 6 days for. All right. So Strangers Pray at Night. You wanted to talk about Dollface.
I did. Emma Bellamy. She was a local actor, actually. She's from Kentucky. She had 3 credits at the time, and this was kind of like her breakout role. She was replacing, I cannot remember the original actress's name, but she went on to play a character named Tamara, which is interesting because they asked for a Tamara. They both had the very similar look. One was Australian. This one's Kentucky. I guess they wanted to make it almost like as identical, her to be the most identical to the original Dollface. But I thought it was really interesting that she didn't have any roles. And this was her first thing. I mean, more or less. I mean, on her credit for IMDb, I think she just had like two things. It was basically like, you know, girl in cocktail dress, number two or whatever. But she, this was like her big thing, and she really went into it. Another one, pinup, was Leah Enslin. She started out as an accountant in Georgia Films.
Hey.
She did a lot of movies that both you and I actually worked on. Blindside, I didn't work on that one. That was before my time. Hall Pass, she did The Walking Dead. And then after doing that for, I think it was about like eight or so years, she started to become an actress slash stunt woman. So she was like a legit stunt woman. And she worked on movies as television shows such as Sleepy Hollow, The Walking Dead, and Gerald's Game. She actually played the stunt woman to...
That's cool. Carla Gugino.
Yeah, exactly. She was her.
Did I ever tell you the time that I stood in for Scott Wilson on Walking Dead Season 2 and everybody there, like Ernest Dickerson, the director, and all the cast were like, why are you here?
Because you were like, what, like a foot taller than him and like half his age, quite literally?
Yeah, and so I had to like squat down. I'm like, guys, I didn't do this. I was like, you know that, like, I was like, they brought, and everyone's, it's fine. So I had a kneeling scene. So I was able to pull that off really well. I just had to kneel. And while someone laid in a bed, because that's when the kid was sick and they were taking care of him.
Oh, okay.
So I was on the farm, like reenacting Scott Wilson. And I remember I walked off the set laughing because I was like, what just happened? And then some of the actors were laughing too, but it was a serious take, so they didn't want to laugh. And I remember someone looked at me and I just went, you know,
everyone, I didn't pick myself.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, guys, I'm 5'7.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my Walking Dead. I know. I was like, I'm never coming back to this.
I did that show as a walker numerous times. I did the season two finale.
Really? Nice.
I did the season two finale. I get shot in the head. Then I did.
You also played a walker in Michelle Darnell.
I was a walker in Michelle Darnell. Very bizarre scene, but not sure why it went on. But selling Girl Scout cookies.
And dream sequence. I barfed on the kids.
All over them. I went full fly on everybody.
You ripped off your fingernail.
Took off my jaw.
So my students in film studies, we did a trivia day as like a final. I broke them up in groups and I asked them 20 questions. I'm like, what's the movie? Because I show them clips about remakes and horror movies of the 80s. And I was like, what's the movie where Jeff Goldblum pulls his fingernail off? And my groups knew it.
Earth Girls are easy.
And also, I asked my students about Nosferatu and what, you know, what kind of expressionist, you know, films it was. And they all knew it was German expressionist.
Wow.
So that's good. I did a Judd Nelson from Breakfast Club with my students.
You should throw him a real serious curveball and be like, why wasn't Tom Savini on, Friday the 13th Part 2?
They would have been like, I don't know, Mark. We didn't talk about this.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to find that one overachieving student who watched the documentary when it came out a decade ago. And he's like, he has a great line. He says, this isn't Jason Voorhees because Jason Voorhees is dead. He's like, so I didn't work on it. I decided to do The Burning, which is one of my personal favorite summer camp films. I mean, there's a million of them, but that's a really good one. And he says he chose to do that one because he said, if you watch Friday the 13th Part 2 and think that's Jason, you're stupid. It's like almost a direct quote. It's really funny because he was really insulting about that movie. He was not a fan of it. But yes, the other characters, the man in the mask, back to the Strangers Prey at Night. Damien Maffei, I can't pronounce his last name. He plays the man in the mask. He doesn't really have much of like a wild career. He does a lot of basic B movies. None of the original actors from the first one were in the second one. I thought that was a really interesting choice because they're all wearing masks. So it's like, how much of a drastic difference? I mean, it is a decade, but it's like, how much of a drastic difference, especially like with height, maybe a little bit with weight, but it's like, there can't be that too much of a difference. But they really went hard to try to find people that were identical to the original people.
Yeah.
And they did a good job, I felt, especially with, I was a big fan of Pinup. She really took it like a champ because, I mean, she had the most stunts aside from, you know, the man in the mask being set on fire.
Yeah. And getting hit in the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that was
because Dollface just got shot in the face by that. You know what I liked? In this movie, Lewis Pullman refuses to shoot Dollface. But then later on, Bailey just waxes her with a shotgun.
Oh, yeah.
And then blasts her in the face with a shotgun.
I love that scene because it really said, like I said about this being a great slasher film, that anybody can literally die at any time. And you think that, you know, Dollface has got it going good. They're not going to kill her. And then, you know, for some reason, Bailey Madison learns how to pull a shotgun away from the cop. You know, it's locked in there. Somehow she figures that out, which is...
I guess, in that world. In that world, they're not locked. It's Kentucky, dude. They're just driving around.
That's a good point. It's like Idaho.
Yeah.
It's a Mystery Science Theater 3000 joke, if you didn't catch that.
No, man, I'm going way over my head.
That's one of my favorites.
That's like a pitch for Major League, just outside.
Oh, I use that one all the time. No one, and shit, I've been cut already.
Remember in the second one when it's Omar Epps replacing Wesley Snipes, but Omar Epps and Jesse Ventura when in a movie together where Jesse Ventura jumps like 15 stories onto the ground and lands on his feet, and they're watching a trailer and Charlie Sheen's like, speaking of Omar Epps, I'm in an episode of Resurrection Season 2 that I was working on, and I play a goon that has to carry him out of an area after he's been drugged, and I almost ran his face into a camera.
Oh my gosh.
Name drop. Hey, if you're doing Michelle Darnell all day, I'm doing this. I almost killed Omar Epps on the set of Resurrection.
Well, from the Hunger Games, I still have my crew shirt.
Hey, I still have my hat.
Oh, really?
Gotcha.
My
right? I wear my Hunger Games hat.
Oh my gosh. I haven't worn that shirt, though, in forever.
I still have my Resurrection Season 2, and I have my James Mansfield's car, and I have a water bottle from The Following.
I went through my...
Can you believe they gave me a water bottle?
I got so many of those water bottles. I went through my cupboards. I have two from The Avengers. I have one from
Rampage. Oh, this is getting Rampage. Bad.
My first day, I got the Rampage one, and I was like, why do I have this? And I went and did a movie.
Such a humble brag. I had, Rampage gave me a water bottle. Why? Why?
I didn't understand.
I was on Rampage with Dwayne Johnson, and they gave me a water bottle.
He shook this hand.
Can you believe it? It was a water. So I'm on Resurrection Season 2, almost killing Omar Epps. Never mind.
But no,
all right, so go back.
I really enjoyed Strangers Pray at Night. I thought it was
a very good movie.
It was a lot better than the first one, which I was a little hesitant from watching because I didn't like the first one. And the second one was a lot different because it relied heavily on different forms of filmmaking. Like I said, like Japanese horror films, which I love. They used a lot of Adam Wingard's style and his use of music, which I love.
Yeah,
I loved how they kind of did the Stranger Things, but before Stranger Things, we did have a lot of other films that did do this before Stranger.
Well, Stranger Things did what other movies have done,
of course.
Yeah,
Stranger Things pretty much ripped off. I mean, not ripped
so
off.
So that reminds me of this time I was
changed.
Working on Stranger Things during this podcast, and I made it late, and we had to record a podcast at 9:30 p.m. because I was working on Stranger Things and I had to rush home. You know, that's one of our podcasts from 2015. I had to rush home from Stranger Things to record a podcast, Chris.
I was supposed to work on Stranger Things, but I was working on Avengers already.
So it reminds me of this time. So people are going to hate us, dude.
No, I think this is my last podcast.
See you later, Chris.
No, but the use of the music and the lighting and everything, I loved how they did it. Adam Wingard did the same thing with all of his movies. If you see VHS, the best segment, the
VHS
siren.
2. Gareth Evans.
Which one was
the cult one?
Oh.
Yeah, but that one's the best.
I love that. That was such a curveball, right?
Yeah, the guest, the first one in VHS, though, with the siren. That's
the siren.
Far.
That was filmed in the Virginia Highlands, actually. My friend Fawn, name dropping.
Jeez Louise. Yeah,
my friend Fawn actually did
the I worked with her, too.
Yeah. She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah.
But she worked, she did all the makeup for that movie.
Let's just stop talking. Let's just name drop.
Yeah, let's just do an entire podcast the same
thing. I want everyone to know that Chris has about 6 inches of cigarette smoke or cigarette ash going up to his feet right now. It's like a sandbox in my office.
Smoking with his
right
kneecaps.
It's like in my office right now, it looks like a sandbox. So, final thoughts on this. I think it's underrated. I think it's very well directed by a very good director, Johan Roberts. The cast was exceptional, and I think it features one of my top three film sections, set pieces of the year. Now, listen, there are better, but I didn't expect this set piece from Strangers Pray at Night. So I think that's why I love it so much.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Like, all right, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Of course.
Amazing, right? But it's going to have great
set
pieces.
Of course. I mean, it's not a $5 million film.
Yeah. So when I was watching this movie, I was expecting to watch it in the background. I wasn't expecting much. And when that scene came on, I was already invested. But when that scene happened, I went, this is next level. This is beautiful.
When you texted me that, because I had texted you that I was finally watching the movie. And then you said, oh, just wait for the pool scene. And I was like, okay, I got to. And then as soon as it came out, I was like, wow, he was not kidding. It really was. He was not joking around with me.
I want to pool scene it up. I just want to talk about the pool scene.
We just need to have more movies with murders in pools. Let's talk about The Prowler.
Swim fan.
Oh, gosh, that movie.
I'm doing my 200th episode.
Freddie Prinze Jr.,
for
right?
No, Jesse Bradford.
Oh, my God.
And
bad.
I don't think she was a fan of swimming. I just think she was a fan of him, which bums me out. Because she's not, like, super into swimming. Like, she's not, like, the statistician. She's just like, I like him. I don't like swimming. So, swim fan is... It should be a swimmer fan.
A swimmer fan.
A fan of a swimmer.
Oh.
A guy... I like a guy who swims.
Who thought of a movie about a horror film about a swim?
I have an unhealthy...
It's like... What would you call them? Swimmers?
Sorry. I have an unhealthy love of a guy who swims. That's what the movie...
Something about guys with extremely long arms.
Yeah.
Like...
Michael Phelps. So, I like people who eat 500 calories a day.
Don't we all? That's the reason why I got kicked out of Cracker Barrel.
Yeah. That's probably a true story. Let's move on. So, anything else you want to talk about with this movie?
Just final thoughts. Yeah. I was not a fan of the first movie, as I have said multiple times, but I really enjoyed the second one. It was very, very, it was very good. It's a lot different than what I think most people would have expected from a sequel that was made a decade later.
Yeah. And I mean, it had no right. All right, this sounds weird to say, but it kind of had no right to be so good.
You know, it's true. Yeah, because it was a low budget film. It probably didn't really have. It had a huge fan base in 2008. Yeah. I remember that one because that was the first. I think the first of the many of like home invasion type movies. I mean, of course, in 2008,
Vacancy.
Everything exactly, and. That was in 2007, so it was still kind of in the same... It was in the same era, though. Everybody was all about, like, the 1970s and 60s and 80s and that whole time era. That whole time right there. So then they made a horror film based on the Manson murders. So that's kind of what Strangers was loosely based on, with all the writing and blood and everything, exactly like what Squeaky and the gang did. Did I just call them that?
they wrote in this one too. Hello,
they did. They did writing and
I really hope they did. I was hoping they did a Raising Arizona reference, and just wrote fart like hello, and it's one of the things on there was fart.
Someone strikes a match right underneath.
I
would have farted.
Yeah,
it would have been.
I would have if they wrote fart in that movie. I would have loved it. But this is a fantastic film, and you know this movie didn't make much money. It was successful. It did make $25 million domestic on a $5 million budget. Very good movie. But compared to The Nun, which made... I'm serious, dude. It made over $600 million, I think, worldwide.
Got domestic. And the domestic was like $300. I could not believe that. I was like, this movie was junk.
In Mexico and Brazil, it pulled in over $200 million. Which, you know...
I just dropped all 12 of my cigarettes from my phone.
And they're lit, of course. So it pulled in $365 million worldwide. Foreign, let me tell you about these box office numbers it did. It pulled in mass quantities of money in... I'm looking at Brazil, right? Yeah. So, I mean... foreign movies don't make that much money overseas, especially in Brazil, but it made $20 million in Brazil. And then in Mexico, it made another $22 million, which I know I said that was a lot, but...
That's a lot considering it cost $22 million to make.
And I mean, well, the thing is, you know, releases like this don't really pour in bank like that. But The Nun just pulled in a ton of money worldwide, and it's not a good movie by any stretch. It's loud noises. It's jump scares. But the main thing that I liked
that's kind of what they... I mean, it was still like... It was in the Annabelle world as well.
Yeah.
And it was written by the guy who did the Annabelle movies.
But I like the second Annabelle. The first one is the second one has like pretty gnarly scenes. The first one hurt my soul.
I thought they were just the worst things I've ever seen.
I guess I was really disappointed with this.
I was expecting so much more.
Yeah, with Annabelle?
Annabelle as well as The Nun. I just... As soon as it started out with the... was like, I was done.
And then this one was directed by Corin Hardy, who did The Hallows. Very good director.
He did a lot of music videos, specifically one called Strangers.
Hey. really, I liked him. And so I had a lot of hope for this movie. But the main thing I'm happy about, right, it pulled in $350 million. Did we just say that? Yeah, $350 million worldwide. But I'm a big fan of Damien Bashir and Thaisa Farmiga. I think they're very good.
She's going to be great.
Damien, he's one of my – I love him. I think he's a great actor. I liked him a lot in The Bridge. I think he's a very good actor. And so I'm happy that it made $350 million just to get eyes on Farmiga. And what I like is – you know, Thaisa Farmiga is the sister of Vera Farmiga.
Yeah.
And
so, she's going to be set. They look identical.
So I like that it was a younger her in it. I mean, that was
a really cool idea. It really was a nice little tie-in and everything. It's kind of like when they used, what's her name, that looked just like Helen Hunt. From she was in The Glass House.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what I'm talking about. She was in Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh,
that girl. They look like
Lulu Sobieski.
They look like that. It's like, whoa, my gosh.
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
And I like that sisters did, you know, she played the younger her. I think that Farmiga as an actress, I know there's actors and actors who, this is random, but you find that certain actors are more watchable than others. You kind of watch them and you're just like, I like watching this person. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it's the same thing with The Rock. I mean, whatever it is
on screen,
every time he's on TV, I will stop everything and watch it.
I mean, he pops, right? Yes. He pops on screen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Not just his pecs. so he does that, but I think that Farmiga is very watchable. Also, Damien Bashir, he's good. But the problem, this movie, so in The Nun, right, they go to this convent. And in this convent, people have to pray 24/7 because a bomb misplaced something. And then an evil got out. So then they had to pray all the time because there was an evil. Is that right?
That is right. And I thought that was a little ridiculous. I didn't know what quite they were going with. Because I don't know much about their world. But that was just something I just was watching going like...
I had a scowl on my face. When you were talking, I know this is a podcast. But I had this like weird look on my face. It's like, what?
The eyes got darker. I noticed that. And the fist got a little tighter.
I'm clenching right now. I'm swinging.
It starts out with the jump scare with the body coming off. And it's just like, da-dung. But like, I just did not, I couldn't really get into it. I did like I loved the cinematographer.
They did.
Maxime Alejandre. Uh-huh. He did Maniac, the remake, which if you haven't seen, strongly recommended.
A lot of point of view.
Elijah Wood. How else would you sell that movie? The original one. I mean, my God, the shotgun going through the...
Yeah.
I just love that. The shotgun through the windshield, blowing everything. It's just... You know, they shot that without any permits. As soon as they blew it, they were just like, let's go. Can you imagine 1982 in New York City, this body blowing up, and then just like,
that'd be normal in 82. That was before Giuliani. You watch those movies in the 70s
on
New York, just like the grimy streets, like Taxi Driver and all that kind of stuff.
God told me to.
Yeah,
like it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was grimy.
Maxime also, bring it back to The Nun, Maxime also did The Hills Have Eyes remake.
Oh, that looks very good. That's with Aha. He's a good director.
He mainly works with him. His very first film that he was a cinematographer on was High Tension.
Wow. That's a whale-shot movie.
Gosh, you want to watch a movie that will shell shock you for at least a day? That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a definite good one. And of course, as soon as America caught that, they were like, "Bring him over, and we're going to have him do whatever bloodfest he wants to do." And he was like, "Well, I love The Hills Have Eyes." Wes Craven's like, "Well, why not? Here you go."
He excels. So I just wrote an article about remakes for Rotten Tomatoes. It's going to come out in January, and Aha has directed two very good remakes. Just in general, any remakes like Star Is Born, any of that. But his remake of Hills Have Eyes and Piranha 3D.
Oh, Piranha 3D, I think...
Very good.
I think the people who don't like that movie totally missed the idea.
Yeah, it's a bloodfest.
Oh, yeah. And it's just women with giant breasts and getting everything... getting
And blood. Guys being loud. It's about bros, blood,
heavily based on the character... I mean, Jerry O'Connell, which I thought was a great
it's
choice.
It's like a Spring Break type movie.
The thing about him was that he was clearly too old to be hanging out here. But he was heavily based on the Girls Gone Wild guy who was in jail at the time. For recording underage girls going wild.
They should have called it Girls with Low Self-Esteem. Arrested Development. Have you watched that show?
No, I have not.
Oh, so on Arrested Development, there's a show that they call Girls Gone Wild, Girls with Low Self-Esteem. It's really bad. I'm not saying that. I'm not being like the bad guy. I'm just quoting Arrested Development.
But, of course.
No, that movie was everything was to 11. The soundtrack.
Yeah.
The performances. I mean, but it got Ving Rhames. It got Adam Scott, Elizabeth Shue, Jerry O'Connell, Paul Scheer, like very good actors.
And a great
Christopher Lloyd, Richard Dreyfuss.
That's right. I forgot about Christopher Lloyd. He shot all of his stuff in like one day.
Yeah, I'm in and out. Give me a million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that movie.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And then Piranha 3 Double D, which was a fantastic title.
Bad movie. Great title.
Oh, man.
But back to The Nun. Sorry.
No. The Nun, I felt, some of the things I really did like about it.
I think that's the first time I've ever gotten us back on track on this podcast.
All right. Some of the things I really did enjoy about The Nun was that they did use real life things, whereas the movie was not based on anything real. There's no real occurrence. There was no evil nun that was haunting this Romanian castle. But it was based on a real demon with the same name, different spelling. Valak. Spelled differently. Same name.
Not Zool.
Yeah. It's a wonderful singing voice you must have. But he, they used the real demon. They also had the little things in there, like, they tied the string to the finger, so you did the dead ringer. That's all real. I liked that. But it just, they had so many different great cinematographer. They had dynamite crew.
Good director.
Great director.
Good actors.
Great writers, too. I mean, the story was written by James Wan, and then it was made for the screen. I guess James Wan was doing
Aquaman.
Aquaman, yeah. It would have been. And Gary Dauberman? I can't remember. I don't know. I think that's how you say his name, but he wrote It.
Yep.
And then very good talent.
When I heard this movie was coming out with the cast and the writers, I was like, this is going to be a good one.
That was my first
And then it was Annabelle. Well, imagine. All right, so if this came out after Annabelle, I liked Annabelle 2. That was it's a fresh score. Annabelle 2, like it's a good. I like it.
I will have to rewatch it, or I'm taking your word on it. I'm going to lean towards the second one.
And so I thought maybe they learned from their mistakes of Annabelle, and we're going to make a good movie. But it's weird that the pieces just didn't fall together for this film.
I felt like they maybe have overshot it. Like they thought that maybe, well, we already have everything. Everything is going good. Well, people will watch this anyways. I felt like kind of that might have been it.
We have an audience.
It's kind of like Saw. I watched Jigsaw for the first time today, actually, and it was just horrible. It's Saw 9.
Yeah, I watched about 7 minutes of it. I was like, I can't do it.
It's literally what you think the twist ending is. I was like,
Carrie Ellis comes back. Yeah, Jigsaw was not. It was unnecessary. But this one, I felt, if they did it right, they could have gotten more stories from it. And in fact, from The Nun, I wish we had a story about the knights that battled it and blocked it in something with an artifact with the blood of Christ.
That's a
gangster story right there.
That would have been very similar to the storyline from
Season of the Witch with Nick Cage.
Oh, wait. How can I forget? I remember when that movie came out, Season of the Witch, I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, they're remaking that George Romero movie. Not the same thing at all.
Wait, Halloween 3.
Demon Knight, remember that movie? That would have been the same similar storyline with the nun, with the knights that are battling.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I mean, that whole thing, because that's what William Sadler's
And he has the blood, the original. And he blocks doors.
The same exact storyline.
I like when Thomas Hayden Church spits on the demons.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then they blow at him.
Like, they hate that.
He's from Wick. I mean, that's a good line. Like, he knows these demons enough. They're like, they don't like that.
That's a great movie.
But that movie, even at the end of The Nun, the ending in the whirlpool, in the jacuzzi.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't.
It was just kind of a jump scare. Like, I don't know. I know we're not touching. We spent a lot more time on The Strangers. But this Nun movie, I guess it's just a good case study on making money.
We could talk about James Wan. I mean, he definitely knows how to stretch a buck. But he's also a very extremely talented man. I mean, we got to look at what he did with The Conjuring. Yeah. The Conjuring was made for $1.5 million.
No, that was Insidious.
Or Conjuring was $2 million.
Conjuring had like 15 million.
But Insidious, yeah. I went 1.5. I went bonkers. The red-faced demon, that.
Yeah.
I lost it because I was like, this is a great movie. And then Insidious 2 happened, and that's when I turned it off.
I love Insidious 2.
Insidious was it?
That movie left me a nervous wreck. Okay. It left me like you every night, just sitting in a room smoking cigarettes, drinking cheap scotch. Amount. Yeah.
I can't even afford the scotch anymore. I blew all my money on
this. Just drinking water?
Blew all my money on dirty water and espresso. Horrible investment.
I love that. I just like that Lin Shaye is now headlining movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and they make $300 million worldwide with Lin Shaye as the lead. That's pretty great.
I'm looking forward to the Specs and Server, I think.
Specs and Tucker.
There we go. Specs and Tucker. They're doing a spinoff of them.
Really?
That would be great. I'm really looking forward to it. They were really good, like, comedic balance to what was going. The seriousness, but also ridiculousness of what's happening in this movie. It's like, I mean, you got to imagine, it's like, you have to call this woman to come in because you think that you're being haunted. I mean, how many people would actually sit there and go like, honey, we got to sit down. I think the boy, you know, yeah, the one that's in a coma. Look, there's a spirit that followed me whenever I was a boy. Now he's following our son. And it's like, you know, the wife would just be like, honey, I'm sorry. I have to file for a divorce now.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's okay. I got this woman and her goofy sidekicks. They're going to come in and cleanse this house. You're like, okay, well, here's the paperwork.
And what I like about them is they're not doing it. They're just doing it to help because they know they're not fleecing people. Like they are legitimately going into horrible places to help. And that sells me on them a lot.
They're just a great characters.
Yeah.
I love them about that. They're very like slapstick. It's almost like the characters from the Ghost Adventures movies or, you know, any of the countless ones like Paranormal State or, you know, Ghost Hunters. But it's like the goofy version of them. The version that you wanted to see, but they actually are them in the movie.
Yeah.
I loved it.
So we're not
What movie were we talking
the
about?
The Nun. How about this? The Nun, we covered it a little bit, but one reason I brought you in is because if you've been listening to this podcast, Chris has rattled off movies and I'm pretty sure he just makes up in his head. He just sort of stares at the wall when he goes home at night. But I brought you in to kind of talk about some recommendations, talk about some little known films that people might want to watch. So I'd love to know, you know, what movies, super random, that you've watched that we could recommend to our listeners.
Absolutely. I would love to. I watched a movie on kind of on a whim. I saw the front cover of it. I was flipping through, I believe it was the Showtime app that I have. And I was looking through it and I was just looking at random movies. And this one popped up and it had a ridiculous title, but it had a very interesting cover. And it was called American Satan. So I immediately was like, this is going to be one of those slapstick movies, you know, like Satan's Little Helper or Jack-O-Lantern, one of those movies. I was like, I assume that. Exactly. But it was a really good movie. It was American Satan. It was starring some of the guys from the Black Veil Brides. If you don't know who they are, they're a band. If anyone's a fan out there that's listening to this, please don't crucify me. They sound a lot like him, but they scream. And there's more keyboards, in my opinion. They're not bad, but it's more like stuff that you were like, I listened to this when I was in high school. It's not bad. But anyways, it's starring the guys, some of the guys from that, and also Malcolm McDowell, who plays Satan.
He's in everything.
And he's killing it at his age of, what, 9,000?
Yeah. In one.
So basically, they're a rock and roll band in high school. The main character from the Black Veil Brides, they're in high school. They don't do much. They don't touch on the whole, like, you know, oh, you're a freak or anything. They don't really touch on that, which I liked. So he starts in a rock and roll band. They then go off. They have various shows that they perform all over Los Angeles. They are doing okay, but they want to do better. So they meet a guy on the streets played by Malcolm McDowell, supposed to be Satan. And he's like, you know, that first when he meets him, he's cursing him out and everything's like, oh, well, I have this show going on for you in here. And they're like, what are you doing, you drunk bum? And he's like, what? Well, come on in. So he takes him inside. And there's a show. And they're like, well, this is the band's here. They're supposed to perform. And he's like, what's going on? So this guy's helping them out. They don't know why. They're like, okay, well, he must really know us or something. They didn't really think anything of it. So then he says that he wants to explain, he wants to have their career go even further. So he has someone who's like a drunk, college student, like walk into them, makes fun of them, you know, a lot of F words being thrown around. They take him, they lock him into their van, chain it up, and they put gasoline all over the van. Now they have the lighter, they have a lighter, and Malcolm McDowell is like, okay, we'll sacrifice that guy and I'll do everything that your career will basically be perfect for the rest of your lives. And they're like, what do we do? So what anyone else would do, I guess. I mean, so they throw the lighter in there. So then the van bursts into flames.
You saying what anybody else would have done? I'd have ran kidding. Out of there.
But so they set
Why
the van...
Why is Malcolm McDowell talking to me?
So they set the van on fire. Long story short, they save the guy because they're like, this is really effed up. So they save the guy. They get him out of there. And then they winds up killing the guy anyways. So then he's sacrificed. And then their career takes off. And I mean, their music is like, they're huge. They're known all around the world. And then it's a really good case. The reason why I like it, I mean, it seems like a pretty basic storyline. And of course, you know, there's a lot of sex, a lot of drugs, rock and roll. But there's a lot of great dialogue that's in the movie about these things that wasn't in other movies about rock and roll. There's so many different quotes from so many different magazines throughout the entire movie. They really kind of like, they really show like in the 70s and 80s how rock and roll was seen as the devil's music. You know, Judas Priest, Metallica,
Kiss,
Knights in Satan's Service. So they do different quotes and throughout the whole movie in the dialogue as well. That's taken from these different magazines from that era. And that it's very, very smartly written. It's not so much on its face, like what you're watching. Like I saw it and I was like, this isn't really that great of a movie. But then I started reading into it and it was very, very beautifully orchestrated.
Nice.
I mean, the music's okay as well. It's not really my thing, but you know.
American Satans?
American Satan is what it's called. Right. Another one I was going to say was a documentary, also about music.
Godfather Part 2.
Documentary about Mark Hoffmeyer, Godfather.
I almost said a movie, but I think we've pushed that. The Boss. Darlene Marlene.
Darlene Marlene, that's a good one.
That's a sequel.
There's another documentary that I watched. It came out last year. Probably a lot of your listeners don't know this guy unless they're really big into underground punk rock. His name was G.G. Allen.
Oh, G.G. Allen?
Yeah.
It's a documentary about him?
It came out last year. Not about him. Called The Allen Family.
Oh, did he do it?
No. He's been dead for 25 years.
Wait, what about G.G. Allen?
No, it's about his family.
Oh, well.
His mom is still alive. She's like almost 90.
Oh, okay.
And she is spry as ever. But it's about his brother, Merle, that he that he's trying to sell, still selling the image, still trying to sell
Gigi's
pictures, t-shirts, music, everything. And it's really interesting. It was a great documentary. If you haven't seen a lot of the underground videos that were being tossed around whenever we were in our like early 20s, late teens, then you would be able to see it now. Like there's that spoken word. I don't know if you remember this, but the spoken word routine that he did where he beats the you know, living crap out of this woman. And then he's beat up by like five different guys in the audience because the woman he's talking about, he's bragging about how he's going to kill himself on this date. And the lady says, kill yourself right now. And he's like, it would please you too much. And he punches her, grabs her, and throws her across the room. And then these guys jump up and just beat the living snot out of her.
Did he set that up?
No.
Oh.
He was crazy. I mean, remember him? I mean, he has a line in the movie where in the documentary where they say, he's like, well, in my opinion, you should do any drug that you see fit. And they say, what's the best drug to do? He says, anyone that's free.
Jesus. So,
he was not exactly about clean living. It was no surprise that he died of a heroin overdose very shortly after his 1993, I guess if you want to call it concert. I mean, there was like 12 people in the audience. It was played at the gas station in New York City. I have that tape somewhere in my place. But it's only like 20 minutes long, and then it ends with him literally causing a riot in New York City. And he's stark raving naked, wearing cowboy boots, just throwing everything all over the place. And then he's taken in by some junkies in their leg, and he's like, all right, let's go buy some drugs. But they show all that footage that you probably didn't get to see back in the day, unless you were a hardcore fan. And also, I would just like to promote, because I'm a big fan of Joe Bob Briggs. Remember Joe Bob Briggs?
Yeah, Joe. He's still on Shudder.
He is.
Yeah.
He's going to be, he did The Last Drive-In, which was a 24-hour marathon. And then he did Dinner with Joe Bob, which was for Thanksgiving, which was the Dinners of Death. They've played some great movies. If you're really big into drive-in films or B-movies in general, you know, tons of blood, tons of just gore and junk. These are the movies you want to watch. Joe Bob Briggs, he's back on Shudder. I love it. They're just phenomenal things. They're doing a Christmas one here soon.
What are they going to do? Rare Exports?
They said they're all going to be part of the same series.
So Silent Night, Deadly Night?
I don't think it's going to be, because Silent Night, Deadly Night's already streaming on Shudder.
So
I was thinking maybe Puppet Master, but that wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But
that's not a Christmas theme, is it?
No.
Yeah.
Said it like I should be slapping you.
Say what?
How dare you?
I've never watched a Puppet Master. I just know that
all
the guy,
13 of them,
the guy who was in the room was in a Puppet Master movie.
He was.
And I read it in the book, The Disaster Artist.
So that's only Puppet Master 6, I think.
Yeah, one of those. Greg Sestero.
Yeah, Sestero. Greg Sestero. Yeah, they're going to be coming out soon, and that just. Yeah, they're great movies to watch.
Awesome. Any other recommendations?
Well, I mean, I don't want to self-promote, but my short films that I do make, the Home for the Holiday is the Christmas one.
I'll put a link on the post. So if you're listening to this, just go to Movies, Films, and Flicks, look up Strangers Pray at Night. It should be episode 165, and I'll just have the link to all your videos.
Excellent. Yeah, I would love
that.
So
then we'll do that. The Christmas one will punch you in the face. So you should definitely watch that.
I remember that text message you sent me. Like afterwards, you were just like, ugh.
I hate you. But no, man, dude, I'm really happy you joined us. We got to tell some old stories. We got to self-promote horribly and talk about Michelle Darnell and our love for Strangers Pray at Night. So we've been trying to do this for a while, man. So I'm glad you're back from Savannah from working on another movie and joining us, dude. So yeah. Want to do the guest next?
Oh, I would love that. I'd love to do any movie.
So let's do the guest next. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Chris, Mad Dog Kelly, this is Movie, Film, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you guys.